Welcome back. This is National Geographic Weekend. I'm Bort Matson. If you have something that has like been your lifelong goal, and you go out and you finally accomplish it, do you just quit? Especially if you're in your early 20s, do you think, all right, done that, don't have to do any other big adventure? I thought we'd find out because we talked to one of our former Adventurers of the Year, Greg Trainish, who in 2008 was a National Geographic Adventure Magazine Adventurer of the Year. So you figure now you can just retire. Except I've run into him in Montana in Glacier National Park, still out in the wilderness. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Hey, thanks for having me, Boyd.
Your big adventure was to walk from one end of the Andes to the other. You and your girlfriend at the time. First people to ever do that?
We were the first to do it. We left from the equator and walked to the southern tip of the continent.
So it took, what, 2 years?
2 years, 22 months exactly.
And how far was that?
It was about 7,800 miles, more or less. We don't know exactly. We had a GPS for about two-thirds of the way and kind of guesstimate the rest of the way.
So when you got through with that, you probably said, I need a rest.
I did. I did need a big rest, and I took a rest for a little while, but not as long as I think most felt like I should have taken.
I thought you'd just leave the trails forever, said, I've done enough time on trails. But here you are, Glacier National Park, helping us with the National Geographic Kids Hands-on Explorers Award winners, 15 kids. Here in Montana, and you're still out in the outdoors.
Oh, yeah, I'll be in the outdoors the rest of my life. I love it out here. I belong out here, and I've found myself out here, and to be able to share that experience with some kids is pretty important and pretty special for me. Absolutely.
Now, when you were doing the Andes, you had some trouble, right?
To say the least, yeah. We had a lot of trouble along the Andes. Everything from illness to bushwhacking and having lenses of people's eyes torn out to...
What?
Yeah, my partner Dea, we were bushwhacking in a place called the Rio Monflas, and this catastrophic flooding event had come through unbeknownst to us and wiped out any hope of getting down that drainage. We are 6 days in at this point with no hopes of going backwards. We had been walking smoothly at 3 or 4 miles per hour and got to this huge wall of debris all of a sudden and were slowed to a crawl less than a quarter mile per hour. And as we were bushwhacking through this rubble, a branch swung back and hit Dea in the eye. I watched the lens of her eye flap open and closed. It was pretty painful for her, and she couldn't see.
All right, this is pretty bad, and now you're out a long way from anywhere, or anywhere that has medical help for a removed lens. What do you do?
You tough it out. And Dea is a tough girl, and she was able to stick it out and keep her eye closed for a little while. It did eventually re-heal. 4 or 5 days later, she was able to see fine again, and we kept going. But the biggest concern was that we're out of food at this point. We had no...
She didn't know you were out of food because she couldn't see.
That's right. I just would tell her, oh, yeah, there's a few crackers left. But we wound up just climbing.
You say, here, eat this, and just pick up anything off of it. Here's a little branch I found.
We've been feeding the kids some random flowers this week. Maybe that would have worked at that point. But we wound up just free climbing up the side of this canyon wall. It was 3,000, maybe 3,500 feet up the side of this canyon wall, and that was our only hope. And we eventually got to the top and found a way to some vineyards 25, 26 miles later.
And, so you found wine.
We found grapes and wine and ate plentifully that night and gorged ourselves, absolutely.
And at any point during this, obviously, probably thought maybe we should go home when she loses her eye temporarily. Were there a lot of points like that where you said, maybe this isn't such a good idea? Maybe this wasn't the dream of a lifetime. Maybe it was just a nightmare.
But it happened like every week. I was maybe a week and a half in maybe. We're just outside of Simyatung, Ecuador, and we've been through the most heinous day you'd ever believe. We've gone climbing up 70-degree slopes, using our hands to get up it, bushwhacking, falling down, cutting ourselves. There was some point around 5 o'clock where I took off my pack and launched it down the side of the mountain. I watched it roll down and again, and I was so pissed off and so full of tears and screaming out loud, who the hell thinks they have the nerve to walk a continent? What the F are we doing here? And it was... it was a long time that it took Dea to get me to calm down, walk down the hill, pick up my pack, keep going.
Now, you threw your pack on purpose in anger.
Oh, I threw it completely pissed off in frustration. More than anything, frustration. And then it got worse when we finally walked up to a local gaucho and asked him where Simutong was, and he told us that we had been walking in the wrong direction all day. This is after I freaked out already. And that continued to happen throughout the entire 22 months. And it was lucky that when I was down like that, Dea was there for me to pick me up, and vice versa. Every time Dea was crying and upset and needed to quit, there was no choice. Our choices were to lay down and die or keep walking.
We're talking with Greg Trainish, who was a National Geographic Adventure of the Year in 2008 for this extraordinary expedition, exhaustive, tiring, challenging, and uncertain. It was an uncertain expedition if you would even make it. Walking the entire length of the Andes, walking the South American continent from top to bottom. That's a long way. Mm-hmm. 22 months out there on the trail. But you also got to thinking, why am I doing this? And this is what I want to talk to you about. You thought, is this selfish of me just to do this so I have this check mark in my book that I've done something other people didn't do? And what did you decide?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely did have that selfish feeling. You're out there for so long, and I would look around me, and I'd see climate change in action, and I would see that I was out there for me, and I was experiencing something for me, and it gave me a very selfish feeling. And it's one that I had had before, too, on the Appalachian Trail before that. And so I came home, and I started talking with other folks about that that feeling. I talked with climbers and bikers and hikers and skiers, and I quickly learned that this is a pretty widespread phenomenon. Anybody who spent a large amount of time outside has wondered what they're doing out there. And so having a deep passion and love for ecology and understanding our world, I decided that I needed to get a degree in biology right away. So I did that, started working as a biologist, and then created an organization called Adventurers and Scientists for Conservation, which is an organization that marriages adventure with scientists who are in need of data throughout the world.
And you're not telling people, don't do any adventures. I've gone out there and explored, but you shouldn't. You're saying while you're doing it, you can add just a little bit of extra effort and collect data that scientists or researchers can use. And how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that everybody who goes outside loves the outdoors, and I know that everybody who goes outside would very much do something to protect those places if they only had the tools to do so. And so our organization gives them those tools. They can simply come to our website at adventurescience.org. They can look up any number of projects that we have ongoing, or they can develop their own project. You come to us and tell us, I'm going trekking in the Himalayas, or I'm going to the South Pole, or I'm going to Mozambique or Mongolia or anywhere else in the world, and we can find you a project and a scientist who needs very much for you to collect data while you're out there.
And sometimes it's as simple as just taking a picture every 10 miles on your cell phone to show people what it looks like where you are, and then researchers can look at that or scientists can look at that data, and it gives them a lot of information.
Absolutely. In fact, to bring the whole thing full circle for me, we've got a group of three girls right now who are repeating my route in South America. And they're not walking the entire way, but they are going through the same areas that I was in. And because I didn't have those skills when I was down there, it's really great for me to be able to see that they can simply snap a photo every morning, 360-degree image, wherever they're camped. And Peter Morrison from the Pacific Biodiversity Institute then uses that information not only to catalog the area, but to learn about the new species that they're finding, to learn about everything that's happening there, and really keep a solid record of this area.
Greg Trainish, with whom we're talking here on National Geographic Weekend, is still adventuring, even after his horrific at times, but also exhilarating experience walking the length of the Andes, the length of the continent of South America, and now trying to take it to the next level, letting people have this exploration adventure for yourself, but also add to our body of knowledge about the planet where we are, and it's called What's it called again?
Adventurers and Scientists for Conservation.
Adventurers and Scientists for Conservation. You can go to adventurescience.org.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out.
Adventurescience.org. And, whether you are the world's greatest athlete, mountaineering on Mount Everest, where we got the highest known plant life samples last year, or you're simply a day hiker going up in your backyard, we have projects that we need you to collect data for and that we can get you involved in.
Correct. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Boyd. It's been a pleasure.
In a country where government and religion work together to keep women silent, to not let their voices be heard in public, to keep them covered and deny them access to education, you might think it would take a long time for them to step back into a public spotlight. But thanks to the work of one National Geographic photographer, Reza, women's voices are now being heard, and in an important way in the media. What he has done to empower women and help them tell their stories when we return here on National Geographic Weekend. I'm Boyd Matson.